First, a welcome, very big welcome from me, Steve Litchfield, to All About Symbian Insight number 51. And touching down in the UK very briefly between multiple continental and transcontinental flights is Rafe Blandford.
Hi, Steve, and hello, everybody listening.
And also we have Scotland's answer to Graham Norton. It's Ewan Spence up in Edinburgh.
Hello! What do you mean Scotland's answer to Graham Norton? Thank you very much. No! Scotland's answer to Dave Lee Travis. Yes, we'll go with that one. I prefer that for some reason. Kids, go look at...
For the backstory on Graham Norton and Ewan Spence, see Ewan's blog. I'm sure there'll be a few moments. If you're into Eurovision, you can follow that story down. So on with the business in hand. Nokia World is just finished. We'll avoid the temptation to go with the obvious, which is the N97. We'll mention that a bit later. First of all, though, Rafe and Ewan, but Rafe first. Plans from Nokia on the messaging front. Can you just highlight what's new?
Yes, there's an important distinction to draw here because we've already had the Nokia email service in beta, and that's going to still be around. It's going to be under sort of the general Nokia messaging brand, and joining with that will be Instant Messaging Suite. It's actually coming out of the Oz Communications thing. So you'll have the Nokia email service at the moment offers you basically a way to get your existing email accounts onto your phone, and it will push them to you. So that's things like Gmail and all sorts of other mail providers. Some of it's done automatically if you're using a common one. If you're using something a bit more esoteric, you may have to enter the server settings yourself. And that's actually based on the IntelliSync acquisition that Nokia made a while ago. And rather than make it a corporate offering, they've sort of basically changed it around, so it's now a consumer mail offering. However, the sort of thing that was new at Nokia World that also falls under the Nokia messaging brand is what's being termed Mail on OV, and I suspect the branding may change around a little bit, but this is essentially Nokia offering an email service of its own, and this means that if people haven't got an email account, and as Nokia pointed out at Nokia World, that's 75% of the world, from their phone they can sign up for a new email account and start sending email, and the whole process takes about 2 minutes or, you know, 120 seconds and you can get going, which is very impressive when you see it demoed. To go along with that, Nokia also announced a web version, and this is specifically for the Mail on OV, i.e. the standalone OV account. And this is a service similar to any other webmail account, but it is specifically for the Mail on OV, i.e. the separate email account for new people. I suspect later on we'll see a bit more of a merger between the two, in that you'll be able to get a web version of the sort of pulled-in one as well. But initially, the sort of web version is for brand new OV addresses. Of course, there's nothing to stop someone who already has an email address signing up for an OV email account and all of that. But Nokia, you know, going after two distinct markets, the sort of typically in, you know, Western Europe and other developed countries where people already have an email account, that's the Nokia email service, and that drags it onto your phone into a, you know, from an existing account, and then Mail on OV, which is for completely new users.
Okay, Ewan, anything to add on that? You've been studying messaging and mail?
Yeah, it's an interesting play, and I actually think that Nokia are doing very well, because it takes the email away from into the cloud. It takes I'm just doing it all over the shop here. It takes the mail into the cloud, whereas before it's always been you had to set up your handset with each account and so on, and then whenever you picked up a new account or a new handset, you had to move that over. And this way it brings it all into one central point. It's one of the reasons for OV, and obviously it drives traffic and mindshare back to OV as well. And of course it's also, we mustn't forget that there's also a big push here into the corporate email as well, both with Microsoft Exchange and with Lotus Notes, which is going to be available as well as an extra plugin, depending on what packages that a company will actually buy up on that. And the other thing is there's an IM component in there as well. There's not been a huge amount of information on that. Rafe, did you see any of the IM client running on the floor?
Yes, I did. At the moment, it's Series 40 only, and we can expect to see that coming out in the next month or so. And as I say, it was based on the Oz Communications purchase. And we will see a version running on S60 in due course, but the Series 40 version itself was pretty impressive. It was able to run in the background, something that's quite unusual for Series 40 applications. And it basically allows you to connect to your Google Talk, your, you know, Microsoft Live / MSN, Yahoo, and a number of other IM servers. So it effectively adds as something that can sign into many IM versions. And obviously Nokia phones have had an IM version application on their phones for a long time, but it's been based on the Wireless Village, so it's effectively been useless. So this is going to be the first time we'll see IM out of the box on Nokia phones that is usable by most people. You know, previously the sort of operator play on IM really didn't go anywhere. So, I mean, I saw a quick demo of it, and it did all the things you'd expect one of these sort of federated IM clients to do. And they're going to, we'll probably see Nokia chat work into this in some way, and it is going to be XMPP based as well. So there's Nokia taking open standards, but of course they're also pulling in the third-party IM services. I think we'll probably hear more about it, and I think we can expect to see it on S60 early next year, probably around February time.
It's also interesting to point out that it's being rolled out on a regional basis. So it's starting off with 12 countries, I think, in 2009, and then rolling out further as the year progresses. And there may well be a sort of subscription part to this as well, Rafe. It's unclear. I mean, we had the note that they were launching commercially, and I know that things like Files and Ovi has a free portion and a paid-for portion as well. Is this the case?
Yes. I mean, there's still some discussion around how exactly this will work, but the intention is really to do it by bundling into operator data bundles, and the likelihood is that these applications will be available as a standalone download. So if you already have a data bundle from your operator, you'll be able to use them for free. And actually, for something like the IM, that's certainly going to be the case. I spoke to the product manager a little bit about this, and he was sort of saying, actually, we want to get some users on it so we can give it as a proof point to operators to show how it works. But of course, most people aren't necessarily going to sit there and download things to their phone. They want it out of the box. And if the operator provides that, they may provide, you know, a specific data plan that says you can use as much email and IM on this phone as you want to, and may charge, you know, £3 or £4 a month, and Nokia will take a cut of that. And that's the intention in terms of the commercialization. On the Nokia email front, it's less clear, but certainly Mail on Ovi will be free as a service, but there may well be some data plan stuff going on with operators, and that's why you're seeing the different rollout in markets. You know, a similar thing applies to IM. You know, it's going to be operator-led, but will be available for free. And it's worth noting that Oz Communications is already very strong in the States, already has lots of existing deals with operators, which is one of the reasons you're not going to see an immediate rollout in the States, although there'll be nothing to stop people downloading it and using it in the States if they're on a data plan. So hopefully that clarifies that. But it's still a little bit up in the air because these things are being announced and they're doing the deals with operators right now. So we'll have to wait and see for some particular markets. But for most people listening to this, you'll be able to download something like the IM and likely the email and be able to use it for free.
Okay, thanks, Rafe. I'm not sure they'll tempt me away from my beloved Gmail, but there's certainly lots of exciting things to look forward to on that front. Also announced, was Nokia Maps 3.0. We're not going to go into detail on that here. I'll be playing with that on N96 over the next week or so, and I'll give you a really in-depth preview and my own thoughts. But just very briefly, they've basically rewritten it from scratch with needing new maps, new binaries, much higher resolution data, new satellite imagery, 3D topography, 3D models of famous buildings. There's lots and lots of bits they've added. It's still very early days. I think we had trouble in the All About Symbian team even installing it. So this is going to develop very much over time. So there's no real hurry to look at this. So we'll leave that for another podcast. Also, to go along with the new version of Nokia Maps 3.0, there was Maps on Ovi, which is the web-based interface, kind of 3D, and it works as a plug-in in the browser. And I've been trying this as well. And again, this is probably needs quite a bit of extra development, but the promise is that the two, of course, will talk to each other, and you can plan routes and plan itineraries actually on the web and then sync them down to the smartphone. But we'll be playing with that over the next few weeks. Before we move on to the major device announcement, Rafe, was there any other services and announcements you wanted to cover briefly?
There were plenty more, and we'll be mentioning some of these in the future. The point-and-find concept, which is basically you hold your phone up and point it at a poster or a building, and it tells you what it is. That's going to be coming into beta soon, so that's something to look forward to. I just should say on Nokia Maps, I had a brief play with it, and for all the new features that get talked about, actually the most significant change is really the fact it scrolls around much, much faster and zooms in and out much faster, which I think really takes it into sort of the mature territory, and I'd start recommending this to people over Google Maps because of the extra stuff it has, but it's also very usable in sort of the basic mapping format. And having that integration between the web and mobile is hugely significant in the service environment. And I look forward to commenting on it in a future podcast. Outside of that, Nokia World was the usual busyness in terms of all the stuff on display. And it was the first chance I had to see the E63. We'll comment on that in a later podcast. But I also think it's worth underlining that in the keynotes, we saw something of a change from Nokia. Normally, the keynotes from Nokia are very factually based. And I think it comes from the sort of Scandinavian tendency to be fairly humble and just present their stuff and let it speak for itself. But this time, they're a little bit more aggressive. So both OPK and Anssi Janjokka were talking about the products, but they very specifically mentioned by name the fact that they were better than Google in some areas, better than Microsoft, better than Apple, and they were really throwing down the gauntlet. And they, you know, for example, with the N97, they said, this is the best phone you can get, look at the feature spec and compare it to what our competitors do, we're truly open, we're not going to turn away developers. Again, another hit against Apple. One of the most interesting things was from the Google point of view, they said, you know, Google has said we're going to index the world's information, and Nokia said that doesn't go far enough. We're going to coordinate the world's information. We believe everything needs to be on a map basis, and location is the other great index of our time. And Nokia Maps is only the beginning of what their vision encompasses at the moment. And they're talking about having a map that's dynamically changing with context-sensitive information about where your contacts are, what's going on around you in terms of events and news. So it'll be very interesting to watch that. And I think clearly that's where Nokia sees a lot of development going on in the future. But that kind of attitude, it was interesting within the media sort of room, it was clear that people thought that this was a good move because, you know, previously Google, Apple, Microsoft have all sort of not exactly trash-talked about Nokia, but they certainly haven't been frightened about, you know, promoting their own virtues. And Nokia have largely held off from that, and now they're being a lot more aggressive. And we've also seen it in some of the advertising campaigns for the E-series in the UK. And it is a change of strategy, I think, from Nokia, and one that's very welcome because they are the dominant company in mobile, and they should shout about it more. We've often said they don't promote themselves enough, and I think we'll be seeing that continuing in the next year.
Yeah, the one thing that struck me watching the keynote on the Tuesday morning, leaving aside the services which they also announced and their style, and along the lines of the style, there was this, they introduced music. I noticed as they built up to the big device launch, was it Anssi was talking, and they had this ambient music building and building and building, kind of Apple style, which I thought was quite an innovation. To have any music at all underneath an announcement, I think, is says quite a lot for Nokia's recent announcements. But they were announcing, of course, the N97, and branded an N series with touch and QWERTY. Nokia are calling it a mobile computer. I'll run over the specs very briefly, and then I'll go to Ewan, if I may, just for Ewan's take on it, and then we'll go to Ray for the sort of hands-on opinion. It's essentially an NHD screen, which is a 360 by 640 resolution. It's 3.5 touchscreen. It's got haptic feedback, the usual 5-megapixel camera, blah, 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 usual GPS, assisted GPS, Wi-Fi, tri-band, HSDPA, Bluetooth, USB, 32 gigabytes of internal flash memory, plus micro SD. It's basically hugely spec-filled, and people around the globe have been commenting as such. I guess the biggest worries are probably in terms of the maturity of the software interface and how that compares to other devices on the market. Ewan, do you want to go first with your take on the N97?
It's very nice, isn't it? It's I wanted to really point out just a couple of things. The first one is that spec sheet, apart from potentially the storage size, is very similar to the E90. And I know that's something that Steve and I talked about when the announcements came out. It's really did catch the news cycle. The PR that Nokia have managed to capture on this device, while not up to Apple's standards, it's far and away the best reaction I've ever seen to a product announcement from Nokia. Yes, there have been grumbles of the fact that it's going to take 6 months to get here. But checking back historically, I think it was about 4 or 5 months between the announcement of the iPhone before it was actually available in the stores. So I actually think that's good as well. And that 6 months will give the firmware time to mature. The bottom line is, I think this is a very good, bold move from Nokia. They've already had, they'll have the experiences of touch for the 5800 in a lower scale device. And it also kind of takes the pressure off the 5800 as well. A lot of people looked at that device and went, is that them trying to fight the iPhone? And certainly ourselves were going, well, no, that's them going for the lower end of the market. Now that 5800 is going to have time to mature Feature Pack 5, which is the one that uses touch, and roll those changes into the N97. So when the N97 comes out, it will already have had this, the software will have had this sort of quiet beta test by tens of thousands of users already out there under their wing. The firmware is going to be key to this. The hardware is gorgeous. The specs are wonderful. By the looks of it, the design and the feel of the device and the slider is certainly one of the best that I've seen across any PDA class since the Series 5 MX. And it will come down to the software. It's very easy to get that PR cycle and keep it rolling if the software and the hardware backs it all up. I think Nokia have got a good chance here. They're sitting with pocket kings, and that's the sort of hand you want when you start a round of poker. If they can just carry on and play all the way through the river, we're going to have a very successful device here.
So largely positive there from you. And I just should correct one thing. It's not Feature Pack 5. We're talking, it's S65th edition. But subtle difference, but it might make a difference if you're searching for something on the web. Rafe, do you want to just leap in and save us? What, you had hands-on with this device. What were your opinions?
Yeah, I mean, as Ewan says, he's quite right about the software, and the thing that's worth stating straight up is, you know, obviously it's 6 months out, there is some instability in the software, so it's not really fair to talk too much about that. But having used the 5800, I have a pretty good idea what 5th edition is going to be is about. With the N97, you're actually getting the N series version, which means you get things like UPnP, so the internet radio baked in, more polished camera application, extra stuff with Nokia Photos, and I suspect we'll actually see a lot more of that. I wouldn't be surprised if Nokia holding a few things back on the software that we'll see announced nearer the time. And actually the timing of this announced 6 months ahead is quite interesting. I think Nokia wanted to get this device out there in isolation at Nokia World, and I would rather suggest it means that there's an awful lot more to come from Nokia in the early part of next year, both at MWC in February and perhaps later in sort of March, April time, when we might have traditionally expected a device that was coming out in June to be announced. So in terms of hands-on, it's always difficult coming up with sound bites for this sort of thing, but I would say this is the first N series with E series like build quality. It's incredibly well built in the hand, especially when you consider the complexity of what's going on in terms of the mechanism. You know, it's very solid as a sort of monoblock device with, you know, the full touch thing, you know, relatively few buttons, and the extra screen does make touching a lot easier. There's been a lot of commentary about the fact that it's not a capacitive touchscreen, it's still resistive. Honestly, I'm not sure that's much of a problem in some ways, and the advantage it brings in terms of being able to use it with a stylus for the Asian markets, or with gloves, or with a pen, or something like that, really are very significant. And the only people that are really complaining in a big way about that, I suspect, is the US market, where it's probably not going to sell all that well because the operators won't take it because they don't like a strong, dominant Nokia brand on their networks. And I'm not sure the N97 will change that, although perhaps the N97 will get so much buzz, some of the operators will be forced to take a look at it. The keyboard, it's not actually as good as it may be suggested from the size, I think, basically because when you're designing a device like that, there are some limitations on what you can do in terms of the size. It's just three lines. The space bar is slightly awkwardly positioned on the right-hand side of the device. The home key or the S60 key is actually on the upper part of the device. It's the silver diagonal button that you see at the bottom. And that isn't replicated on the keyboard, so it's a bit fiddly when you're having to press that to move from one to the keyboard. But in other ways, you just have to go, this is a pretty amazing device. When you see what's in it, it really does take, you know, the breath away. Yes, it is quite big, and I think perhaps there's maybe a slight note of caution here that Nokia have perhaps tried to do too much with one device and have therefore ended up with something that's quite big. It's slightly taller than the iPhone and fatter, for example, although it is thinner, so it is usable one-handed, perhaps in contrast to the iPhone, depending on how big your hands are. But having said that, this is their kind of do-it-all ultimate device, I think, certainly for the, you know, a large part of 2009, and I suspect we'll see other devices come in this touch area to maybe that are thinner, maybe touch only, don't have the keyboard. you know, when you look at some of the design features, it's like on the camera you've got the same slides as you had in the N79 and N85, and that just works really nicely. It's even been increased in size, and the sliding is a bit smoother. It's made of stainless steel. It's really nicely done. The hinge mechanism, which I'm sure sort of some of the old PDA people are thinking, ooh, that's a bit dodgy, I'm assured has been engineered very well, and looking at it, it does feel and look incredibly, incredibly good, and it's well protected at the back. There's stuff pops up, and quite how it all works, I can't really work out. I had a very close look at it, and I was impressed by the quality of it. It uses really nice materials around the screen. It's metal around the screen and hard plastics on the side, then sort of a metallic-y material on the back, and that all goes to add into a really nice feeling device, far more so than something like the 5800. It feels like a high-end premium device, and you know, the widescreen actually makes a really interesting difference for multimedia. You know, it will be able to shoot video like that. You know, the display of stuff on the screen is really, really gorgeous. I mean, the screen, as ever with these high resolution devices, makes a real difference. So I'm not surprised people are getting excited about this device. As I say, there are a few words of caution, but you know, in some ways equally significant with the hardware is this is, you know, the most complete fulfillment of Nokia's OV vision of software and services on the device, a sort of connected to everything anywhere kind of vision. And especially we're getting things like the social location coming in, and this is the ability to automatically update your location and position from both the GPS and the compass sensors, that's the magnetometer sensor for the techie people, and being able to upload that to Facebook and your friends. So that's the social location concept that Nokia have come up with, which hasn't really been implemented by anyone else. It'd be interesting to see how that works out. And that software extends onto the home screen as well, with sort of web runtime based widgets being reorganized on the home screen. And I had a play with that. Works incredibly well, easy to reorganize. So there's an awful lot of, you know, really nice things here. But in one sense, we're going to have to wait a while because it's not coming out. And I suspect we'll see a lot more. And, you know, that it really is amazing in terms of what it can do. And, you know, the mature OV services from, you know, Nokia Music, Engage, their files on OV, their messaging on OV. This is going to be one of the first devices that really implements that in a mature way, not what we've had up till now, which, you know, perhaps it's still in, and it's still in development, of course, but the N97, you know, this is the most technically advanced phone in the world, and there will be, of course, questions around the software, but you look at it and you go, it's amazing how far things have come, even from something like the N95.
Yeah, Ewan, you've been looking at the news to do with the N97 and N-Gage. What's the deal there?
Well, obviously the N97 is going to be picking up the N-Gage service. And one of the interesting things that I picked up was when people started looking and talking about that keyboard, which reminds me very much of the keyboard that's on the N810 Intranet tablet. It's why the D-pad was on the left-hand side, where most people using this would be right-handed. You look at keyboard, your cursor keys are on the right hand. You look at any of the older traditional devices, even the 93, 9500s, they were on the right-hand device. Why put the D-pad on the left? The answer is simple, because that's how most people playing games put their direction keys. Function keys for A's and B's, C's are under the right thumb, directions under the left thumb. The N97 has got a gaming focus as well, which, given the other numbers of focus that we've just picked up there, it's actually quite impressive. What will be intriguing to see is the fact that this is going to be a different screen size. All the other N-Gage devices at the moment have been 320 by 240. Now, whether that means we're going to have some sort of black bars either side of the game, as we have now that YouTube has moved up to widescreen and is still carrying a lot of 4:3 ratio videos, or whether games will be rewritten to compensate for this, remains to be seen. I'm going to use the Cyan word now. It's like when Cyan introduced the Revo, and all the people who'd programmed for the Series 5 Mix suddenly had to contend with a different screen size. Some games had to be rewritten. Some games just worked automatically with a different size screen. The fact that the screen bevels up slightly, there's this slight curve on it, which brings the screen away from the flat plane of the keyboard. I think that's going to help gaming as well. But my one worry there is, because the keys are going to be sliding and are going to be quite flat, there's going to be very little raising or indentation to help feel where the keys is. I have a perennial issue with these very flat D-pads on modern devices, and my thumb is just useless on them compared to something like the N95, which had quite a raised D-pad, or even the 7650, which had a little tiny joystick. So I worry about how game suitable these keys are going to be. Rafe, what are those flat keys like physically to use?
It's hard to say. I mean, I didn't have that much time with the keyboard, but yes, that is going to be an issue for some. I would say it's better than the N810 keyboard by some way, as the keys are actually separated and there's space between them, and they do have a click. But as you say, because of the tilt mechanism, they're relatively shallowly raised off the keypad. I was pleasantly surprised how good it was despite that, but yes, it certainly is a limitation.
I thought you were going to say it was a lemon there. That would be quite worrying. The other question, of course, is it has a touch screen. So are we going to see N-Gage games with touch enabled? And that's a tricky one, because most of the other N-Gage devices, and let's be honest here, I don't think the N97 is going to be a massive percentage seller compared to all the other devices that can run N-Gage. They don't have touch. So do we see programmers writing a separate game with touch enabled and touch disabled? Are we going to see a fractioning of the N-Gage platform? To be honest, I don't think so. I think we're going to see people writing for the lowest common denominator of the N-Gage standard as well, which means I think we're going to stick with 320 by 240 screens. I think we're going to stick with keyboard-only controls. I don't think we're going to see things like graphic acceleration that may or may not be available in some later N-Series handsets. But, of course, if the N-Gage does stupendously well, then we may see differentiators. But at the moment, given a lot of new N-Gage titles are rehashed Java games with N-Gage stuff bolted on, I don't see forking of games coming up.
I think with the N-Gage stuff here, and we'll have to wait and see a little bit, they weren't talking very much about it, but you have to remember, for the big first-party titles, and you may be right on some of the Java ports, a lot of the sort of graphics creation and the sound as well is done in a way such that it's resolution independent. And so we'll see some of those games come across first, I imagine. We'll probably see touch-exclusive titles. And don't forget, the N97 is only the first of more touch devices. So, I mean, N-Gage on touch devices will be pretty popular in due course. There is also the keyboard on the N97, so you'll probably do a certain amount of control from there. What we'll see on pure touch devices is more open to debate, but we've already seen Bounce on the 5800, which takes advantage of the bigger screen and the touch controls and uses the same sort of graphics libraries as before. You know, they've just upped it to the right resolution. So I don't think that's perhaps a bigger deal as some people may think. The bigger issue is really the touch enablers for N-Gage games, which is why it's not going to be out for 6 months. And we can probably expect by that time there'll be more touch devices announced, and N-Gage will be running on 3 or 4 touch devices by, you know, this time next year.
So there we are. That's a brief look from Nokia World 2008 into the next 6 months to a year of Nokia N-Gage services, maps and messaging. So there's plenty more to come on all those fronts in the coming months, I'm sure. It's about all we've got time for this week. See you all next time, guys.